So since my session about Aurelia and speaking more generally about front-end development, various tools and frameworks that we have, I kind of look at the history also as looking at how we get to this point, how we probably should proceed in this space. I'll share some of my experiences as a mostly back-end developer who transitioned to the front-end and JavaScript over the past year and a half, 2 years. So my name is Kuba Walicki. You can see me on the internet as in this series incarnation, in this series incarnation on some sites. If you want to talk about the development or basically anything else, feel free to write an email to me. You can also easily find me on Twitter and on GitHub. And I also blog sometimes. Before I would tell you about myself, that I recently started a company called Happy Team. The name that I know is quite peculiar. The origin of the name, however, is the fact that I met a outstanding group of people at work in a big corporation, and we met in one team, and it worked very well together. We need a lot of software, so we figured we don't really need that corporation anymore. We're just going to outsource ourselves out of the company. So we started Happy Team, and it's, so far it's happy, 3 years. So if you're thinking about stuff like that, trying to do something on your own, I wholeheartedly recommend, because even if it doesn't work out in the long run, and it's not said that it would work out for us, it's still the beginning. But even if we were to stop right now, we've done so much, and it's been a great experience so far. So it's worth it. And the other thing that you see here is Deadday. That is done people just a bit more than a month ago. More or less a month ago. That's a conference in Krakow that I co-organized. We co-organized this, it's a big award. I just helped out the two main organizers, who are also part of Happy Team, by the way. So yes, 2015 is already passed, but we started working in 2016. So I'm hoping to see some of you as well. On to the main topic, which is JavaScript mostly in this talk. So this is me, although I don't look that good, but this is me like about a year and a half ago, that's what I was saying. So I was at a conference in Cluj with my friend, and there was a presentation about JavaScript, doing JavaScript on the front end and on the back end, not JS. It was quite strange to me at that time, because I didn't really like JavaScript, so I figured this is a really weird language and we can barely get to work on the front end if we need to change the color of a div or something like that. Why the hell would you want to use it on the back end when you have perfect languages in there like C#, even PHP I guess is better than JavaScript. So why the hell would you do that? And basically, please don't do that. So you can imagine that I'm standing in front of you now talking about JavaScript and about frameworks and stuff. So something must have changed in the past year and a half. And in fact, a lot has changed. Basically, there was so much, I got so much exposure to JavaScript. And I imagine that most of you have more and more exposure to this language because it's becoming so popular. And even if you're very deep in the back end of the work in your team, it's highly likely that at some point you're going to have to deal with JavaScript. So that's what happened to me. And once I had to work more and more with it, I started digging deeper and trying to figure out what actually this language is all about. And for me, the breakthrough moment was when I found the book and the lectures on YouTube by Douglas Crockford, who is famous for his book, The Good Parts. On this picture, we can see how it relates in volume to the actual book about the whole of JavaScript. So there are not that many good parts, but they are really good. And in this book, Douglas described how you can stick to the good parts, like prototypal inheritance or closures, functional programming aspects. JavaScript has all that, and it's been quite surprising to many people when this book came out, because JavaScript is about 20 years old right now. It's only in 2007, I think, when this book came out that most of the people realized that it's not just a stupid language to manipulate the elements on the website, to make something blink and make something disappear. It's actually a full-blown language that we can do some serious programming with. But back to the topic of manipulating the DOM, manipulating all the elements on your website. So, in my opinion, this is most of the main source of bad reputation for JavaScript that built up from the 1995 when it was released up to a few years ago, was the manipulation of the DOM. So the API, the code that you have to write to manipulate the DOM was terrible. There's a really good video by the Sprockford on YouTube about it, and it discusses that, and discusses how to work around that. Although it's a little bit dated now, but it's just an interesting historical reference. So that's, most people have a direct connection in their mind. JavaScript, manipulating the DOM, it's painful, and you want to do it. JavaScript is stupid. So that was the main problem of JavaScript at the beginning. And that's why people invented jQuery. Not jQuery, like Scott was explaining, but the actual framework. So jQuery came out, and it turned out that we don't have to deal with this terrible DOM API anymore. We can just use CSS selectors. So suddenly it turned out that if you know CSS, it's enough to be a ninja JavaScript developer, because you can do everything on the website that you want. But this, I think this approach has also reached the limit, and we've come to see websites that are just piles upon piles of jQuery code with really complex selectors that nobody understands even 5 minutes after writing them. So we have to look for other alternatives. And an indication of that is that right now we have a very interesting website called You Might Not Need jQuery, where you can log in. Not log in, you can just load it. And if you want to stay away from jQuery, you don't really know how to, you have some snippet in jQuery, so that means it has a snippet in jQuery, and then a standards compliant implementation in vanilla.js without any frameworks. And you have basically most of the stuff that you would need to do. You can, if you don't know how to do it without jQuery, you can have a look here. So I really recommend that resource. Okay, so jQuery was fine, and the DOM manipulation was bearable 5 years ago or so, and more into the past, because what we had to do with JavaScript on the website was basically just some UI manipulation in the form of carousels and accordions, just make something dynamic, expand and close when you click on it. And right now it's really changed, because we're using JavaScript for basically anything, and people are doing rocket science stuff with JavaScript. And as I mentioned, JavaScript on the server, with Node.js. You can program microcontrollers with JavaScript. That's really happening, and people are doing that. So that means that the language also had to change. We could no longer do just hacking together selectors of jQuery and trying to make something look good. We actually had to write some logic, business logic, often in JavaScript. So yeah, so this whole sudden rise of popularity and the spark of interest in JavaScript led us to the point where people started writing JavaScript on the server. It was probably what started the whole revolution and gave people an idea that JavaScript is not just for the browser. And it turned out that it's quite a good idea. Well, this morning, of course, the two Scots were showing the benchmarks for Node.js, and they weren't too impressive. But it turns out this is not the single throughput is the best characteristic of Node.js, but actually Node can handle multiple of those single throughputs at once, more than most of the other technologies. So that's why it gained popularity, and not to mention the fact that it simplifies development if you can use your one language of choice wherever you well, and as many places as you can. Because even if the languages that you use are similar, for example, syntactically, like JavaScript and C#, when you switch from one to another, there is a certain load that your mind has to go through to process the change. And I don't know about you, but it often happens to me that when I switch from my C# code, for example, in Web API, immediately into JavaScript, then I start writing C# code and realize that something's wrong when it doesn't run or when I break my tests. So yes, we can get rid of that. And now coming back to the front end, because in the front end we also see a lot of innovation in JavaScript since we found out that it has some good parts. And for me, the most notable breakthrough, in my personal opinion, is Knockout.js. It was one of the first libraries from the new wave of JavaScript tools. And I think after that, it started the whole revolution of frameworks, which I'll get to. But Knockout.js was really promising, and it still is. It still is a perfectly decent library. I really like it very much. And it has just one job, and does its job really, really well. So it does two-way data binding between your view model and the view in HTML. As I mentioned, works really well. If you don't need anything else, like routing or complex templating that you'll find in a big framework, probably that's all you need if you want to write a basic single-page application. Combine it with your MVC and you're good to go. But then, turned out that this wasn't enough for us, so we just pushed the situation one step further, and that's how Angular came about. And for me, Angular is a bit of an elephant in the room right now. It's in the room full of all JavaScript frameworks that you have, which probably this room would need to be bigger than this one because it's all the frameworks will be in. So why I say that Angular is a bit of an elephant in this room? Angular, I think, version 1, which is still the current one because version 2 is still on the way. So Angular 1, in my opinion, I tried to do too much. So it not only wanted to do the data binding, wanted to do the templating, and also came about with a lot of Angular-specific abstractions and problems, So my experience, for example, from the current project, which is the second or third big project that I do in Angular, but every time, even though we at the beginning we say this time we're gonna do it better, so probably Angular is not that bad, we just don't know how to use it well. But 2 months or 3 months into the project, suddenly you realize that actually you're mostly working on Angular and you're not really working on your application. So you're not implementing your code that provides any business value, you're just trying to make one part of your Angular application communicate with the other. And if you need to do that, and even I might be still myself a mediocre programmer, but even mediocre programmers should be able, on their third attempt, learning from the past mistakes, do better than that. So I think there's probably something wrong with the tool. And I actually think that the Angular team realized that, and that's why they went for a complete rewrite with an evolution upgrade with Angular 2. Because Angular 1, I think, has gone too far and is beyond fixing now with all those additional abstractions and things that you have to keep in your head to even start writing a simple app. So an interesting view on Angular was presented by Rob Ashton on his blog, where he wrote the now famous entry and title, "You Have Ruined JavaScript." Rob Ashton, incidentally, is also the guy known as the Microsoft Build hero, because when MS Build was open sourced, the first pull request that came in was from him, and what he actually did is he deleted all the code from MS Build and added the code for Make and pushed it with a pull request, which some people found funny, and he also said that MS Build cost him years of pain, so he thinks it's sensible to replace it with Make, so I'm just going to extended, so that all you can see. I actually personally found it funny, although many people felt offended, but this whole conversation and situation actually led to one of my favorite comments of all time, where I suddenly learned that GitHub is not the right place for humor, so be warned and don't do stuff like that because people get offended. And there was really quite a shitstorm on Twitter after he did that. Okay, let's go back to full screen if I can. Yeah, and so, yeah, closing up what I learned, that's not in a washdown. So, you'll see that even if he's talking about React, he has to give some patches to Angular. And turns out that friends shouldn't let friends use Angular. But my friends from Happy Team, from my company, actually let me use Angular on another project. So in order to keep this true, we recently amended it and said that friends don't let friends use Angular unless they're doing it with them. So if you're all in this together, then you can at least feel that your friends haven't failed you because they're feeling the pain as well. So that was Angular, and then it feels like the popularity of JavaScript framework actually went through the roof. And we started seeing framework upon the framework every day, probably something new, a new idea. Even on this very conference, Tomasz Kacer was presenting his own JavaScript framework, which is incidentally pretty good. Based on Mockup.js. So if you haven't seen the session, I recommend you watch the recording. But basically, those frameworks kept coming up. Some of them were instantly forgotten and not picked up. But there were a few major players that actually gained some interest. Probably React, the most notable, Angular 2 is still in the works. Meteor is a very interesting example because it's a bit of a different approach. And it's interesting also because of the fact that it's JavaScript front and back. So it works with Node on the backend, front end and JavaScript obviously, and also JavaScript in the database to some degree because you're storing JSON in MongoDB. So an interesting contestant. But what started bothering us about all this JavaScript revolution us as web developers, and I think those of you who deal with JavaScript more would agree that it just became too much. There were so many frameworks, and there still are, but I feel the pace of developing new frameworks and tools has slowed down a little bit. Or maybe I just stopped caring and stopped noticing. But it feels to me that it has slowed down a little bit. But there was suddenly in 2014, beginning of 2015, it felt like every other week there's some new tool that you have to learn. And people were getting upset because they realized that if they wanted to keep up and try a new framework, to be good engineers, if there's a new tool that people get excited, you should have a look and try to figure out if it will apply for you and if you could get any use from it. But if you were to do that, you probably will have no time to actually do any paid work. Because there were so much awesome stuff. So this is really interesting blog entry that the guy says that yeah, you probably can complain about it, but in the end you should really be okay with that, and you should probably spend some time, not too much, obviously you won't be able to learn every framework. But you can get an idea from some blog posts or from opinions on Twitter what each framework offers and try to figure out if it's worth it. And he said that he's okay with that because in the end, if you keep on top of that, if you know two or three frameworks, then your value to the client is absolutely much higher than if you only are comfortable with Angular or Lookout and you want to move out of your comfort zone. The opposite view, presented by Jimmy in this blog post, which gained some popularity at the beginning of this year, the state of JavaScript in 2015, Jimmy said that no, we can't have that anymore. So no human can actually keep up with that, it's not worth it, we're wasting time on this, where we could be doing better stuff. And he also did some predictions, which I think we're currently seeing as being fulfilled. Major prediction that he said in the future, he believes that people will stay away from big frameworks, which force you into one way of thinking and lock you in favor of composing multiple small libraries that you can then reuse one by one, plug away and plug something in one by one. So you use a library for routing, for templating, for data binding. And if you're unsatisfied with your choice, theoretically, you wouldn't have to rewrite the whole application in a new framework, because that's what changing the framework means. You won't be able to reuse much of the front-end code. You'll have to write it from scratch. And if you have little libraries that you composed yourself, something in one library is not working for you, it stops being supported, it has some bugs that are not fixed fast enough for you, you can much easier than in case of a framework, you just take it away and implement it with a different tool. So, with that in mind, actually the topic of this presentation is Aurelia, so I'm gonna start talking about Aurelia. With having in mind what I said about too many frameworks and we don't need another one, we need to get to business, should we really be happy that Aurelia is here? Is it solving any problems? Why should we give her a warm welcome? Well, to start, for starters, and that's why I say that I've seen this, the prophecy from this blog was actually being fulfilled, because both Aurelia and, for example, Meteor, that gained popularity lately, they are composed of small libraries that you can actually plug in and replace with your own if you're not happy. So this is actually a framework that somebody composed for you, but you're not forced to use all of the elements of the framework. So, who's behind all this? Behind all this is a guy who should be pretty well known in this conference, as a .NET conference, because Rob Eisenberg is the guy. He became famous probably in the WPF world while he created Calibre Micro, which was a framework for managing WPF applications. And later on he also created Durando, which was a JavaScript framework based on Lookup.js. Also had a lot of success. So this is basically a guy who's been doing front-end frameworks for over 10 years. And each of the frameworks that he released more or less had some success and following in the community, and there were a lot of people using that. So that's one interesting reason why we should be careful when he develops something new, because it will probably be worth a look and at least give it a good look and evaluate for your scenario. What's also interesting about Rob is that he was working for over half a year in the Angular 2 team. So that's interesting that he has that experience and knows what he saw in Angular 2. There was some stuff that made him leave and not continue this cooperation, because he thought he can do it better on his own. And actually, from his frustrations when he was working on Angular 2, the decision came about to leave the team and start something on his own, because he believed that would be a better option to implement his own ideas. You would ask why he didn't force or try to encourage the Angular team to implement those good ideas. But it was just a difference of opinion, I guess. But not only that, one of the most interesting anecdotes that he said about leaving the Angular 2 team was that he often had those good ideas when they discussed in the meetings, and he went away and implemented some new feature that solved all of the problems that we mentioned for a given requirements for a given feature, and he came back with the solution to the team, and they said, that's really good. We would really like to implement that, but there is this little language in Google called Dart, which Google thought is going to replace JavaScript, but then it turned out that JavaScript is good and doesn't need to be replaced, it can just be amended. who had Dart, and they actually developed lots and lots of internal application with Dart. So there are hundreds, literally hundreds of applications written in Dart that Google uses internally. So they need to support it. So when they are developing Angular 2, they're developing a version for JavaScript, which is currently based on TypeScript, and they're also developing a separate version for Dart, and they need to be compatible. So whenever Weisenberg was coming up with those new features, then he thought were really good ideas, and a number of times he was turned down because he said, no, that's not going to work on Dart. And that was one of the reasons why he said, you know what, I'm not a Dart developer, I don't care if Dart is not a good enough language to host that. I'm actually doing a JavaScript framework here. So that's why he decided to do this on his own, without all the legacy issues that the Angular team had to deal with. So what is Aurelia exactly? Aurelia is just your plain old JavaScript. There is no not a new JavaScript, so ES 2015 and 16 or 6 and 7 as it used to be called. What I mean when I say that is that there aren't basically any additional custom elements in the language that you have to learn from the framework. You just write your code in plain JavaScript and it works, because if you follow some simple conventions, the framework will know what to do with that code. And you'll see more about it in the demo. I'll point out what I mean. As I mentioned, it's a collection of collaborative libraries and helper classes, which you can easily replace with something that you favor more than what Aurelia is proposing. What's interesting is that from the ground up, they don't only see Aurelia as a framework for web applications, because it will be a limiting view in 2015. Right now, we have to realize that web is only part of the spectrum of users for JavaScript, because we have hybrid mobile apps. So mobile apps that websites that pretend to be mobile apps and are packaged in the runtime to be able to be sold in application stores. And we have also desktop apps with the Electron framework of sorts. So the Atom editor, or Atom editor, that I'm going to be using in the demo is actually a JavaScript application that's just packaged up to look as if it's a standard desktop app. So they want to target all that, and they have a certain philosophy. So obviously, Aurelia is open source. You feel like no tool right now can be closed source because people won't be interested. I don't support them with a permissive MIT license. I use Clean Code today. As I mentioned, the most important aspect and the thing I like most is that there are a few conventions that you have to know. If you know that conventions that you stick to, there's basically close to no configuration code that you have to write to tell the framework, hey, this is my view model, and this is my view. And the view model is at this URL, or at this path, and the view is at this path. You just name the view model something.js, you name your view something.html, and then they are in the same folder, that's all you need. So Aurelia will see that, and I'll instantly create this component for you. And obviously, because of this modular approach, all of the code that you write is really easily testable. Because if you're creating a view model, you just create a standard ECMAScript 2015 class, which you can easily extract from your solution and inject it into a testing framework and run tests against it without worrying too much about the dependencies that would be somehow entangled inside the code, because of the dependencies you just pass into the constructor. Even though the Aurelia is not even in a beta version yet, it's still in public preview, so it's sort of an alpha release. It's been released really early, like the beginning of this year, so after just 6 months, I guess, of work. So even though it's a new thing and not a it's ready, there's a huge interest in that. And that's also telling that there must be something good to the framework, because people are even running that in production, even though the OEMs themselves, they advise against that, obviously, because they don't feel that the product is ready yet. And it's also interesting in the setup, how Weisenberg figured this out, is that he started a company called Durango Incorporated that's going to be taking care of developing Aurelia, and he has some good business plans to push it forward. So they can give you some sort of a confidence that it's not just a framework that will be forgotten next year, because there's a business that people have invested in, and they're motivated to push this forward, and then they'll be motivated to maintain this framework, to provide bug fixes and extend the functionality. And he plans for a similar model as we see with other similar front-end frameworks like Meteor or Ionic framework for mobile apps, which is that the core offering is free, and in this case the whole framework is supposed to be free, and on top of that you can use it without paying anyone, obviously it will be open source, but once the framework is ready and it's rock solid and gains popularity, they'll be able to offer additional features on top of the framework. For example, in the case of Ionic, you can build your applications in the cloud, you can pay them for that, you can pay for which notifications, and I expect something similar to happen with Aurelia once it's already finished and they have time to work on those other features. Finally, why you should be using that? You should be using that because the frameworks that you're using so far, most probably, when they were created, we didn't have ECMAScript 2015, we didn't have ECMAScript 2016, we didn't have web components which are coming in. So basically the web and JavaScript itself is changing a lot, and I believe that especially ECMAScript 2015, it's a huge change and a huge improvement to JavaScript, and a lot of new good stuff that we should be able to use. But if our frameworks don't support that, then we're a bit worse off. And if we use a new tool, it actually was created to take advantage of all the new features. What really good news is that there are no external dependencies. So when I say that, I obviously mean I'm picking a Angular, which is dependent on jQuery. Even if you don't include it, it will have a jQuery version of its own. And this is true about no dependencies, of course, except polyfills. So if you're using all these new versions of JavaScript and web components and stuff, and it's not implemented in the browsers, we need to polyfill that. So we need to use some fake implementations if the browsers don't have them. But it's good news in the future. So I'm trying to play this card here. If we have a lot of polyfills right now, and we're not using native browser features, but we're using the polyfill, once the browsers get up to speed and implement all the new features, we're going to get rid of the polyfill. It will mean that the framework will get smaller, because we'll remove a lot of code, and the framework gets faster, because it's been historically proven that the native implementations are faster than the polyfills. So a simple model, as I mentioned, some simple conventions that we have to follow. And the killer feature for me personally is two-way data binding, which I fell in love with using Knockout. I can't imagine doing any front-end web development without that. That's why I'm not really a big fan of React.js. And that's why I'm also not keen on Angular 2, because they also drop two-way data binding. I'm guessing because in Angular 1 it was implemented not in the best way, because it's implemented as a dirty checking system, so every time you change some state in your system, all of the bindings were recalculated and we were checking if something changed. So in here we're using a new feature in ECMAScript 2016, which is called object.observe. So objects in JavaScript will have this ability for others to subscribe to changes in the object, and it's going to be much faster than dirty checking implementation. The ambition is that Aurelia is a path forward for both the random users and for Angular users. And there was a big idea that Rob felt that he could capitalize on the fact that Angular 2 will provide no direct migration path from Angular 1, although the Angular team has since revisited and they are going to do more to try to accommodate for existing Angular users. But still, if you're using Angular right now, and for some reason you don't like Angular 2, Aurelia would be an interesting path for you to go. How you get started is with every front-end web tool right now. Before you actually write any lines of code, you have to install a lot of stuff on your machine. So you have to obviously install Node and NPM, because this is what's how you're going to manage your development environment. You install Yeoman, which gives you the scaffolding. So then you can use Yo Aurelia to create a skeleton application for your Aurelia app. And then NPM install. And interestingly, also JSPM install. JSPM is another package manager. So NPM you are using for stuff like Grunt for your front-end build process. And JSPM is what you use in place of traditionally Bower. So all the dependencies that you actually use in your application, like Bootstrap, some libraries, for example, Moment.js to manipulate dates, etc. So those will all be installed through JSPM. And why JSPM and not Bower? Exactly because we're using ECMAScript 2015. And in ECMAScript 2015, we have modules. So there's a new way to define modules, which solves the issue that we had in Angular and in JavaScript before, where you didn't really know what sort of module system to use, require JS, IMD, CommonJS, browser globals. There was a lot of competing standards, now we have one, and there is basically one good polyfill for us right now, which is used by JSPM. So JSPM, if you want to write in ECMAScript 6, JSPM is the preferred choice. I think the only viable solution. And once you do all that, you can do go watch and run the application. And the status is, as I mentioned, it's in public preview, so it's pre-beta. There was a blog post last week by Rob Eisenberg saying that the beta should be out in 2 to 3 weeks. So it's 1 to 2 weeks right now, I guess, if everything goes according to plan. So this will be the first beta. They also mentioned that there's been some changes in the web component standards that they're not going to have time to dig into for the first beta, so there will be a second beta on some of that. And after that, they will recommend that the framework is finished, pending some performance optimization and other bug fixes, but they will see the framework fit to be used in production. So we're almost there. But even though it's not still in this recommended state, people are using that in production, and it's seen a great adoption. And there's been a lot of people also interested in the framework on GitHub and other channels. So right now would be demo time. Finally, let's see some code. But before we see code, let's actually see the application. So this is the Aurelia skeleton application that you can find on GitHub and that you will get when you do your Aurelia from your command line. Although obviously it doesn't say welcome to Warsaw, that's my little change that I did for the demo. So what we see here is the basic app. We have three elements in the menu. So in here we can see a test of a two-way data binding. So what I changed in the view is propagated to the view model and displayed here. It's also an interesting feature if I try to navigate away from here right now. There's a mechanism in the view model to say if I'm allowed to navigate away or not. Obviously I can cancel that, but it tells me that I've not submitted my changes, so I can submit changes and now I'm allowed to move away. Here is a sample implementation of some was from Flickr that I display in my application. And I'll show you the markup in a moment. And also, what Rob Weisenberg personally is really proud of is the child router feature. So he implemented the router, and he's also the one who implemented the router in Angular 2 once he was there. So this is, I guess, his most favorite part of the framework. So yes, on here the actual interesting stuff is that the router can be nested, and what you will see is that you just append the root. So if I go to one of the nested roots and change to Flickr, you'll see that it doesn't matter what's here before. The child router that we inserted in there is self-contained, and if I click back here, I basically have now all the history in the browser as well. But why this is so cool is that you can do self-contained components with their own routing inside. So you can safely and easily place somebody else's code in your application, not worrying that it will break the routing in your app, because it will just append the slash to your URL and manage on its own. So, to the code there, and start with our root index.html document that's served by the web server. And what you'll see here is that we have an Aurelian app attribute on the HTML tag where you want the application to be loaded. And then this is the part that I've been talking about, JSPM. JSPM has a system.js, which is a polyfill to load all those Ecmaster 2015 packages. And then we also load the configuration, and that's actually all the JavaScript files that we append manually in the index.html. Later on, we just use the system polyfill that you have right here, and you import the application that you want to start. You just import the Aurelia Bootstrapper, and it's responsible for fetching all the other JavaScript files that you need. This is really interesting, and we're using that also. We're using JSPM in our Angular application that I'm developing with my team currently. This is really interesting, for example, when you get to the point where you want to package your application for deployment. So you don't want to have multiple HTTP requests for the resources, because it takes too much time. And actually, there are many requests. Let's just have a look here. Network tab, and I'm going to refresh, and I'm going to show you how many requests this little application is making. So it's making over 200 requests, and 250, and counting, 261 requests. That's crazy, right? But it's actually, there's a method to this madness, and the reason is if you're using modules in the way that you're supposed to use them, you'll put every little bit of functionality in a separate module, preferably in a separate file. And that's why there are so many, because the framework is composed of many of those little files. And this seems crazy right now. When all of our browsers implement HTTP2, this will seem really good, like a good idea, because it means that you can have caching on the really small level. So when you do a new release, supposedly everybody in the world is already using HTTP2. So we won't do bundling anymore. We'll just be delivering those small little files to our clients. And if we do a change in one file, just this one little file will need to be refreshed, and not the other will be cached, even though we deployed the new release. So that'll be interesting. For now, this is not the case. So we need to bundle this stuff together. So JSPM itself, and Aurelia also, through JSPM, offers a built-in way to bundle your application. So instead of sending the 250 plus requests, you can just create one big JavaScript file that's already transpiled to ECMAScript 5. And when you do that, it's just recorded in the config.js that you input here. So nothing in your index.html has to change. There is no task that will replace the JavaScript imports in your index.html file, which for me is pretty cool. That's what I really like about this setup. So as I say, when we launch Aurelia Bootstrapper, it looks for this Aurelia app, and this is where it will initialize finalize your application. The convention is that there should be a app.js and an HTML file to load in the root. And as you can see, I have them in my project. But they're not that interesting, so I'm going to go ahead to the welcome page. Welcome page is this one where you have this first name and last name and an example of two data binding. So as I mentioned, you'll see that this is just a plain old JavaScript class that's right now standard. It's been standardized in June this year, as ECMAScript 2015. And if you just look at this class, I have some properties here. I get one method, which just has a getter, two other methods. If you just look at it, there's no way that you're going to figure out that it's being used as part of the framework. There's no additional overhead because of the fact that you're using Aurelia, which is, I think, one of the best features of the framework. So you're just writing your code, and then magically, through the conventions that I mentioned, magically works. You don't have to write any additional stuff. So we have first name, last name. We have some ECMAScript features like string templating in here. So in JavaScript, finally, we can do stuff like that, insert the variable into a string without having to do plus and concatenating strings manually. We have the submit button. And this is the interesting part that I want to show you. When I changed it and I want to navigate away, it asks me if I'm sure. This is because if you implement the Captain Activate class, it will do that. So it will ask the view model if it's okay to navigate away. The framework will ask, and we'll execute the code that's in here. And if you return true or false, the action will take place or not. Oh yes, that's how we look at the HTML. So there's been a lot of talk about Angular 2 and the conventions that they use for the HTML templating engine. There's been some dissatisfaction in the community. So in Aurelia we have a bit of a different a few different ideas. First of all, if we just want to place a string in the template, we use exactly the same characters as we use in this new templating feature in JavaScript itself. So we use dollar curly brace. So I believe that's a good idea, keeping it consistent. And anywhere in the attributes, if you want to bind something to Aurelia, you use the dot notation. So you submit, delegate, and it means that you want to execute the submit method on your view model. If you want to bind the value, you use the value you bind. There are some other options as well. Bind by default is trying to be smart, so if you bind it to an input form, it knows that it needs to be two-way binding. If you bind it to something that's not an input form, it will be one-way binding. But you can also specify that explicitly. And here again, you can see the string in the compilation. So let's have a look at the Flipper now. Because there will be some other features in there. You'll notice that it takes some time to load. One more time. And you see the spinner in the corner of the page here. And that's also a good feature that we can implement in the view model. So apart from can deactivate, there's also a deactivate method, as you can imagine, and there's also an activate button when you first navigate to the page. And this is where you can load all your data that you need to get from the server before the page is loaded. So this is where we use the HTTP client that's provided by Aurelia, but this is just a class that you can replace with something that you prefer. But we get the JSONB from Flickr. And you'll notice that in this activate, we're just returning the promise. So the framework knows that it has to wait for the promise to be resolved, and this is when it shows the spinner. When you configure, obviously, a different style of the spinner, but basically, you have a way to know that something is going on in the background, and you should notify the user that, okay, I'm waiting for something to happen, and then I'll display the page. So this is how we did that in Aurelia. And here you actually, in this view model, you will see the framework to the forefront because you need to use an inject option to basically annotate your class. and tell it that the first constructor that you're passing, which is called HTTP, by using the inject annotation, you tell it that it should be the HTTP client that you have ported from the already HTTP client module. But as I say, there's no problem with using something else because it's just a path. Just a path that you can export yourself. And then having a look at the view model here, we've already seen the string. What I want to show you is the repeat option. As you might imagine, we all obviously need something like that in our templating engine. And we're also using some nice conventions in here coming from ECMAScript 2015, because we're going to use repeat.for, and if we read that together as for image of images, this is exactly the syntax for the new for of loop, which is used also in ECMAScript 2015 to iterate over collections. So I guess that should be probably enough for the demo part. I really recommend that you come look and have a play yourself with Aurelia. It's really easy to get started. A few closing words. What are the next steps for Aurelia? And the support for IE9 and IE10, that's already been taken care of. So there's a good, healthy amount of backwards compatibility that you probably more than you probably need. There's also currently CLI embedding, what I discussed. We have a command line tool for Aurelia to start developing the framework, and then you have command line options also to bundle this once you're ready to deploy. So they're currently also stopped by the API, saying that they're going to release the beta pretty soon. So the most important part right now is to do some performance optimizations, and there will just be ongoing, I guess, and they'll reach the peak when we standardize ECMAScript 2016, when object.observe is available natively in the browsers, then we'll see that the framework will speed up tremendously. And there are some initial reactive docs coming out together with the initial beta release as well. And they're also working on some plugins and the extensions, probably the paid features as well, people will be able to use when they develop apps in our realm. Some resources for you. The slide deck is available at slides.com. If you want to have a look and show it to your friends. Aurelia.io is the website for the project. From time to time, they like to go on the blog and write about. They want to show you exactly why Aurelia is better than Angular 2. And this is one of the latest posts about that. So you can see, I'm not going to go deep into the code, just going to compare the amounts of code. So the main selling feature is that in Aurelia you write less code because you write less framework code. You mostly focus on your JavaScript and your general because you have to write less code, you have less code to maintain, and less code to fit in your head when you have to do something to it. What else on the Aurelia homepage? I recommend you click on Get Started here. Have a look, there's a really good tutorial that covers the initial steps that you need to take. Get a feel from the framework, And this is, as I mentioned, the blog post where they discuss that, wow, we're getting really close to our beta, and it's going to come out probably really soon, end of October, beginning of November, which will be pretty interesting. So, with all that, I'd like to thank you for your attention. We're almost out of time, so I guess it's best if you have any questions to come to me after the talk and discuss them again if there's a quick one. Yeah, so the question is regarding the stability. If I have this view model where I import stuff at the top, obviously I can import a fake implementation and start to do it. So it's just a dependency injection mechanism, and you can take advantage of that and substitute a test implementation that will, for example, the HTTP client will always return some predefined string when you ask it for, and then you can test against that. I'm not